This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. until 8:30 a.m.
Holy double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, everyone. It is our favorite 3CR radio show of the year. It's the one where we get to live stream from the beautiful Friends of the Earth, the iconic organic food, environmental movement. What isn't this wonderful place for the last probably two decades? Right in the heart of Smith Street. If you happen to be walking down or nearby, come in, buy us a coffee.
Yeah,
and say hello.
That's right. Get the coffee happening.
We've been here all week because of obviously we've been doing our sustainable breakfast series, Dean.
Yeah. They've been, you know, I think this is the second year running, so it's really all about, you know, making sure that people are aware of what sustainable initiatives we have, community, we've got the environment, we've got local issues, and really just making sure that we can highlight how important it is to live a sustainable lifestyle. But we do have a pretty jam-packed show for you today. It's going to be very tight. You know, we're very loose normally on Thursday.
Speak for yourself. I have a reputation.
But after the front page, we've got Andrew Kelly talking to us from Yarra River Keepers, Paul Marnie about Meat Free Week, and I'll let you know how I'm going with that. Cam Walker.
How are you going with you? Oh, look, I've been a vegetarian since I was 15. How are you travelling?
I am absolutely struggling. I'm struggling.
But I'll give you a hug.
Yeah.
There you go. What's the biggest battle in going meat-free? What's been
finding recipes. Finding recipes.
Follow my cooking Twitter account. I've got like 100 recipes on there.
Okay, and I did get some for meat-free week, so it's been going okay, but I'm just realising that I'm starting to get run down. But let's get it together. I think what we need to do is find out what's on the menu today. I know yesterday we had pancakes, and today we are hopefully going to have something else.
Well, what is on the menu? What is the beautiful breakfast menu at Friends of the Earth?
Yummy! Breakfast at Friends of the Earth. What's on the menu today? Is it beans? Is it greens? Is it shrooms? Is it carrots? Breakfast at Friends of the Earth. Here, right now.
Ah, 7:05, and welcome, Michaela. Can you give us an update as to what's on the menu today?
Yeah, good morning. So we've got a pretty classic vegetarian and vegan menu this morning. We've got a frittata. So it's with beautiful organic Desiree potatoes, locally grown in Victoria, and eggs from the bullfrog farm. And we've also got a vegan scramble for those who are,
For those who are doing meat-free week as well as the vegan.
Well, Michaela, it sounds like at the heart of FOE is the importance of low food miles, knowing where food is sourced from, supporting local Aussie farmers, healthy produce, food free of chemicals. Why is that so important here at Friends of the Earth?
Well, I guess it fits in with our whole overarching values, which is about the importance of protecting the environment, and it's all about social justice and supporting local communities. And, I guess decentralising these systems that have become, so centralised over time and that are really, I guess, harming our communities, taking the, you know, money and energy away from local people. So, with our focus on supporting local communities, we like to do that. And obviously, it's really important for the environment that we're not transporting the food across the world.
Okay, are you seeing more of it? Like with all the food scares recently, like the fact that we've had hepatitis C spreads and all sorts of awful things because we're bringing in food from countries with much lower health standards than us, and you can only think about the environmental impact. Are you finding more people at FOE interested in this or asking more about where the food comes from, or are you seeing any shift? I mean, obviously a lot of the people coming here would already be educated and aware on this stuff, but are you seeing any shift in terms of a broader awareness in the community?
Yeah, definitely. I think so because, I mean, especially in this area now with all the changes and different crowd of people coming through, people are definitely interested and always asking about where things are from. And so it's really good to be able to know and tell people. And I think that's something that, you don't get in your big supermarkets and whatnot. And, and really important at this time, like you said, with the health scares and things like that. One, you probably, I think Sam's today from our Economic Justice Collective will be speaking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and all these free trade agreements and so on that are all going to be lowering food safety standards and are really aimed at, opening that up for bigger corporations that aren't paying attention to our health and well-being.
We look forward to finding out more.
We're actually being joined by Beth. Sam's
having a bit of a break. Fantastic!
But
yes.
Thank you very much for that. And last year we had Madeline from Madeline's Eggs. This year we've got different eggs.
So hopefully the Bullfrog Gully.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yes, but we still stock the beautiful Madeline's Eggs. So please come on down, join us.
And watch me eat 7 frittatas.
I want a vegan scramble. That sounds divine. Thank you for joining us, Michaela.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks so
much,
Michaela.
Well, it's always that time for Front Page.
Front Page.
And it's been a big week in politics.
The Front Page, where 3CR Breakfast explores what's being reported and what's not in Australia's mainstream media. How the media prioritise the day's news, including issues of bias, corporate influence, and who gets a voice and who doesn't. Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. and again at 8 a.m. A critical analysis of the nation's newspapers.
Front
back.
Page. We're going to have to be tired. 5 minutes for Front Page. I suppose one of the big things before going to this has been the loss of Malcolm Fraser in the last week. What an extraordinary loss in terms of leadership on the refugee issue, kind of the elder statesman of multiculturalism.
Jumping the fence as well.
Yeah, and tomorrow is his funeral, which I'm going along to. So it's going to be a heavy and sad day, but an important day to commemorate.
Is it in Melbourne or Sydney?
Yeah,
in
Melbourne. Going tomorrow.
Yeah, no, it'll be a fantastic event. Just make sure you don't stand too close to that guy called Tony. I'll quickly move along.
Tell me about it.
So what's happening in Australia? It's been a big week in politics. I'll try and go really quickly so we can talk about that. Obviously, there's been a plane crash with German Wings. Two Australians have passed away.
And they've just found one of the black boxes this morning.
That's right. So hopefully that 8 minutes of silence will be pulled apart and we can get some stories. So, and the other one, don't go soft on deficits, says PM's advisors. I wonder if it was Peter Credlin or all of them who said don't go soft. I've got a holiday to go to.
Exactly what have they been soft on? They've attacked the poor, women, indigenous, refugees.
Yeah, what that's right. Left? I think it's on the rich, really. Leave those guys alone.
They need more of that lifestyle choices.
Yeah. The other story on the front page of the Australian, Twiggy the iron ore outsider now once in. This is about Andrew Forrester's repeated mantra that he wants to help Indigenous people. And he's been trying for 15 years.
I'm really sick of that, man. It's like exploit the land of Indigenous people, impose welfare control and income management, as long as it's not applied to you and your wealth and your prosperity, I find it appalling.
Yeah, and he just keeps turning up, doesn't he? It's like, oh, yeah, we'll do this, we'll do that. Nothing happens.
Who appointed him as a leader on? I can't remember electing him.
No, that's
you remember?
Right. Well, he will have the Forest United Party coming up soon at the next election.
No, but he does. It's called the Liberal Party.
Yeah. and that's pretty much Australian. There's not really much. It's, again, property lenders push back on rate cuts. I'll quickly move to The Age. The front page of The Age. Property price dive warning. So the RBA alert again with the market bubble risk. I like how they keep talking about this market bubble risk. You know, ever since the 90s, it's always just been going up and up and up.
And the problem is, until you tackle negative gearing, superannuation, the end of the day and foreign investment, at the end of the day, young people are priced totally out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just ridiculous to see. It's just out of control. But I worry if it's a bubble, whether this is just the way it's always going to be.
Yes, I think it is. And that's why people, like young people, make lifestyle choices to go live in the bush in Byron Bay because they can't afford to buy a house. Privatised trains cost state $1.2 billion, as we heard yesterday.
No, stop. Privatisation is good. Privatisation saves money. Don't you know Mike Baird's about to privatise the entire electricity up there?
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, electricity will be cheaper like it was here when we privatised
it. But as you know...
Do not say a bad word about privatisation.
If you get on a train to Werribee and then it gets to Footscray and they say, get off, we've got to turn back, we need to make some cash.
Oh, see all the data where they just skip trade, stop short of it?
We're meeting our times. We're meeting our deadlines.
I know you need to get to Brunswick, but look, you know, we think it's pretty good we got you as close as Royal Park.
The train left Flinders Street. Who knows where it's gone? As a football supporter, I strongly disagree with all of this. The Stevens case. What's he done now? Well, he got an 8-month jail term, but he's appealing, so he's out. Never mind that he's been violent against his partner, and we've been talking about violence against women. And this just sets another example as to how lax the legal system is.
He needs to go to jail. He needs to send a message around... Violence against women gets you in jail. That's where you should be.
But this guy's obviously been held up on a pedestal because he used to be a professional footballer.
Because when you play football, you're a top bloke.
Yeah. And Labor scales back Mini Valley units. So I grew up in Mini Pines and it would be horrible. They're planning on building units in the middle of the racetrack, which is...
I want 50,000 there. 50,000 units.
Yeah.
I don't care because you know how it's central and it's great environmentally? Forget the extraordinary traffic jam, pollution, congestion...
Oh, it's insane.
Inadequate parking.
Absolutely insane.
It doesn't matter. Build.
Yeah, keep going. But apparently Planning Minister Richard Wynne has pared back his controversial plan. And that is The Age.
Over to the Herald Sun. 8 minutes to death. Tributes to lost Victorians and search for answers. Tears for Two of a Kind, trying to pull out the human interest story.
This was like last week on the Thursday paper, the massive Vidukic murder. I mean, I know it was sad.
Yeah.
They went up to page 8.
Yeah, it's
now
going...
Now they've got to page 5.
Plane crashes saw newspapers. End of the day, no survivors, every minute of the plane. And then we go on to trying to find news, which leads with Crow can't be an Aussie,
and
unions to drug test, drive to
and
test
And you're paying
hold,
for fake flake at your fish and chip
and
shop.
Headings like Bosses Baby Bias Blue. Say that again. Bosses Baby Bias Blue. Staff accumulated. A pregnant Telstra shop employee suffering severe... morning sickness was humiliated by her boss for taking long toilet breaks and frequent sick days. A tribune has found. What a tosser that guy is. Unions to drug test. Construction workers would undergo mandatory drug and booze tests before starting work under a policy being pushed forward by the workers' own union. The CFMEU will today announce a proposal for an impairment policy.
Well, it looks like half the staff might go.
Cannibal chicken starved. Two brothers have pleaded guilty to starving more than a million chickens in a cruelty case that stunned authorities. Veteran chicken farmers Jerry and Chris Apostolatos stopped feeding birds at the 6 Victorian sites. You know, we're talking about the importance of where's your food coming from, where your eggs coming from, animal welfare. Well, these two assholes basically stopped feeding their chickens. More than 86,000 of the chickens starved to death. The rest suffered a string of starvation-related problems.
Yeah, it's weird because they were probably all caged as well. It wasn't like they were roaming free.
It's awful. Asylum cases will cross bridge faster. So tens of thousands of asylum seekers living in the community and bridging visas will have their cases more quickly processed under new laws passed by the Senate. It's going to be much quicker. You know what those new laws mean? If you're a woman that's been tortured and raped, and because of your trauma, shame, guilt, fear, you don't disclose it the minute you apply for asylum, and you mention it later, as most do, you must be refused. That's quicker processing.
That's right. I could imagine, yeah, because that's what's his name? Morrison's Law, isn't it?
It's just awful. Then you've got Andrew Bolt being awful. And good news, Jeremy Clarkson has been fired, which makes me
so
happy
about that.
And that is the front page.
We might go to a community announcement before we have our first guest.
Hi, my name's Sarah. I love coming here because they offer vegan food.
Hi, my name's Paul. This is my first time at Friends of the Earth. I think it's really awesome and the food's great, really healthy and nutritious. La, 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 la,
la, la, la. Friends of the Earth Food Co-op, 312 Smith Street, Collingwood. A tuneful experience.
La, 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 la.
you want to get in contact with a socially progressive audience and diverse communities? Are you organising a forum, concert, festival, rally, call-out or film screening and want to let people know? Unlike other community radio stations, 3CR doesn't have commercial advertising, but we do offer not-for-profit, community and government organisations a chance to connect with 3CR's diverse and lively audience. Go to www.3cr.org.au and find out about our very affordable community announcements. Or call 3CR on 9419 8377 and get your event on air.
Okay, we are back. Last month around this day, I actually spoke to Lainey Brasher, who is one of the organisers for the Meat Free Week Challenge. It started on Monday the 23rd, and I'm taking part, and it finishes on Sunday the 29th of March. It's been a challenge. Being one of those people that eats meat for breakfast, lunch and dinner, it's been insane. So we're joined here by Paul Marnie, who's one of the experts, not necessarily an organiser, but it'll be great to get his view as to some of the benefits of Meat Free Week and I guess some of the challenges that people like myself might be having around this time. Good morning, Paul.
Good day, Dean. How are you going?
Good, thank you.
Morning.
Now, Meat Free Week, obviously it's annual and it's actually gone overseas this year.
Yep.
You mentioned that you're not one of the organisers. Can you tell us a little bit about what your role has been in Meat Free Week?
Sure. I contacted the Meat Free Week people when they organised it last year just to comment on a few of the things that were on the website and on Facebook. And we got talking, had a very long chat. And my focus primarily is animal rights and the environment. Mm. And they asked if I'd be interested in getting more involved in it or becoming involved. They have an expert panel. So I'm one of the people on that panel focusing on those issues that I just mentioned.
And it encapsulates three organisations, which is Bowel Cancer Australia, the World Land Trust, obviously the environment, and then the Animal Protection Institute. Is that where you're coming from there? Protection Institute?
Well, I'm involved in a group which I co-founded called Melbourne Pig Save, so we're also involved as an organisation with Meat Free Week. So I got involved from that angle, and Voiceless is the institute, the animal advocacy group that the Meat Free Week organisation is supporting, one of the charities that it's supporting. So we have a lot of common interests in that regard. Yeah. But my particular interest is the group called Melbourne Pig Save.
Paul, within this, obviously, when talking to people about... Like, I've been a vegetarian 27 years now.
Well done.
And thank you. And it's always a provocative conversation. People are always curious about it. And you're always having to defend and justify it. For me, it's always trying to get people to understand my vegetarianism is connected to the issue of animal rights and animal welfare. Can you talk about why... Meat Free Week's around trying to get people to reflect on that, because obviously at the broader heart of it is animal welfare. Why is that important? And why is not just the eating of meat, but the way in which we produce meat, the way it's processed, why is that in itself such a big animal rights issue in modern times?
Sure. Yeah, I'm actually a vegan, so I don't consume any animal products, so I avoid them in what I wear and what I eat and everything else. And I say to people that really, you could take any particular issue, any one of those issues. It could be the environment, it could be the cruelty issue, and also human health. You could take any one of those, and I believe it's a sufficient justification to avoid eating animals, and certainly avoiding meat is a big part of that as well. So even if people give up meat only, they're still taking a big step
And within that, Paul, what are some of the big issues, like, for people to understand, well, what is the compelling environmental and animal rights reasons why people should reflect on eating meat, on eating seafood? What are some of those big issues at
well,
time?
Well, some of the big issues, we look at animal cruelty firstly.
Like we just read in the Herald Sun about the chickens.
I didn't see that.
We're just reading about two farmers stopped feeding the chickens and allowed 86,000 of the chickens to starve to death.
Okay. Yeah, look, it's inherent in any form of animal farming that there is cruelty. And one of the real contradictions is the prevention of cruelty to animals legislation, because that legislation permits cruelty. The state government's website in Victoria, the Department of the Environment and Primary Industries, says that the Act has exemptions in respect of the codes of practice involved in animal agriculture. And they go on to say that those exemptions do not allow cruelty to occur, but that is a complete falsehood, because the codes of practice allow things like mutilation of, for example, piglets without anaesthetic within a few days of birth. You know,
Paul, it's one of the big issues. If I look back, if we look from the 1950s and 60s to the rise of fast food, to the rise of mass production of food, to the growing population size, there seems to be the way in which we farm animals. Like in the US, for example, you went from tens of thousands of small farms to I think four farms basically provide all the meat to the fast food chains. Like once you find that sort of scale and the industrialization of the production of meat, that must be what a lot of the drivers towards animal cruelty.
It's certainly contributed to it, the intensification of production. And remember, any animal in food production is a unit of production itself. It is being used in order to basically earn profits for whoever's using that animal. Now, the intensification of production has led to increased efficiency, and increased efficiency really comes at the cost to the cost of the animals.
And I guess in regards to Meat Free Week itself, at the moment, it's all about, making sure that we don't consume so much meat that we eat well above the world average. And I guess what we're trying to do with Meat Free Week is address that balance. What do you think Meat Free Week is trying to achieve, and what can it achieve?
Well, I think a really key part of it is awareness. And all we can do is inform people of the facts as we see them, and people can do with those facts what they see fit, but at least if they are informed, then they can make decisions with that information. And the key part is the environment, which we touched on earlier, and animal agriculture has massive impacts on the environment, including climate change.
And the health is insane. You know, I've been saying to Connor, I don't know any Africans that don't eat meat because it's just inbred.
Okay.
But, you know, I think that the effects of eating so much meat, whether it's gout or whether it's having a bowel problem, is also something that a lot of people aren't aware of made aware of.
Sure, and you might be interested to know, and you might know already, but the World Cancer Research Fund, which is aligned with the American Institute for Cancer Research, has recommended zero consumption of processed meats. That's meat that is cured, smoked or salted. That includes ham and bacon, because of the cancer risk, and a very big reduction in red meat consumption. Red meat is closely aligned to bowel cancer, so it's a major, major health issue, and lots of other ailments as well.
Paul, one of the things, Dean is actually having a go at Meat Free Week and talking about some of the challenges. There's obviously one, the cultural challenge, like broadly, like as in you're always in a minority. It's always more difficult. Mm. You don't get the time to, fortunately, come down to Friends of the Earth for breakfast every morning.
Yeah.
But there's also the shift in diet, finding recipes and so on.
Right.
What are some of the simple steps and tools you can give people around trying to make that transition? It actually isn't easy for people. So having an honest conversation going, but here are ways of slowly being able to get to that point. What would be your advice in terms of people looking at it going, I've had a go, it's been a little bit of a struggle, I'm feeling a little bit better, but I'm also battling with it.
Yeah.
How do you get people to slowly not give up and go, you can actually make that transition?
Yeah, look, it's getting easier and easier. Yeah. And from my own experience, I've been vegan for about 7.5 years, and I've got to say, for me, and I might be in the minority, but it was probably the easiest thing I ever did.
Yeah.
And it's just got easier and easier. Yep. It's amazing in that time to see how much more you hear about vegetarianism and veganism in the community. And the market's responded to that. It's easy to find really nutritious, the food is very nutritious anyway, but really tasty and easy to prepare food. And a lot of the major supermarkets are catering for that now.
And, you know, I think some other things, I think we've been speaking to Madge. Then there's that flip side about the GM modified foods for people in your situation as well, because it's got to be healthy. You know, you've got to then go and source it from places that you know, whether it's, you know, coming here and buying organically grown things.
I don't think it's any different for a vegetarian, a vegan, or just somebody who's not eating meat, though, than anybody else.
Yeah,
because
we're
all eating
food. But it just compounds it for you guys. Because
you've got to think about what's in the meat you eat, including things like antibiotics and other chemicals. And just out of interest, the major cause of antibiotic resistance, which is a massive health problem worldwide, is the overuse of antibiotics in animal agriculture.
Yep.
Because they're not used in animal agriculture to battle infection, they're used to prevent infection in the filthy conditions that the animals experience. And in that environment, superbugs develop because it's just overused and they have the opportunity to develop. And then when we're trying to treat patients in hospital, the antibiotics don't work.
Paul, can I ask you, how are we going to shift this policy space? You look at Australia's positioning itself now as the food bowl for Asia. You're seeing a rising middle class in the hundreds of millions.
Mm.
You're seeing our food eventually get exported more than we're eating it here ourselves.
Mm.
There's only going to be a growth and a demand for, because of our food safety standards.
Mm.
So how do we get a mainstream narrative? Because sure, vegetarianism is growing, but quite seriously, when I'm out eating at regular places, you're still very few limited options for people.
Sure.
Meat is still the dominant food. How do we mainstream this issue?
Well,
but much quickly in government policy, when there's a greater intensification of food production focused on meat and a rise of fast food chains, how do we tackle this at its roots?
I think one really interesting thing that's come out recently, December 2014, Chatham House, which is number one or two think tank in the world, according to the major survey by the University of Pennsylvania, they released a paper which gave the results of a survey, multinational survey they conducted, and people in China, India and Brazil are more receptive, they acknowledge more the man-made climate change is happening, and they're more receptive to deal with the impact of food on that. So people often talk about the growth of middle class in India and Asia, but the people in China and India are more receptive to the idea of doing something about it, acknowledging the impact of diet on that. So it's not a lost cause.
And
inform people that basically our planet is a major risk, and I can talk on climate change a lot if you like, but the impact of animal ag, I believe we will not overcome climate change.
But I suppose part of what I was talking about is whether at the heart we need to start with school curriculums, we need to start with educating kids about where the food comes, animal welfare, climate change, the environment.
Sure.
We need to start talking about food production.
Yep. Definitely.
Well, I suppose what I'm trying to get at is unless we're having that national conversation,
and
unless kids are having that conversation in schools, and unless parents are having that conversation,
definitely.
I suppose I'm looking at the building blocks that are going to drive that. Because you're right, with climate change, there'll be a scarcity of resources.
Yeah.
We're going to see the over-farming of land. We're going to see we're going to have to eventually move to a vegetarian diet. Yeah. But Or move inland, but the worries about at what point will we act.
Yeah.
The Australian Tour yesterday was running the science on climate change is yet to be settled. That was yesterday's Australian newspaper.
Well, that's the Australian, the Rupert Murdoch publication.
I know.
So you can't take anything.
Rupert Murdoch. Seriously.
The science is settled.
I know the science is settled.
Yeah.
I know it is. But I suppose I'm just looking at it. Can you think of any other big initiatives around where we need to be starting to create that long-term policy change?
You mentioned school kids. Now, I love the idea that if you put a 2 or 3 year old in a room with a rabbit and an apple, which one will he or she eat and which one will he or she play with?
Yeah.
But we condition kids to become blind to the cruelty and what's involved, what they eat. It doesn't take much to just nurture that compassion in children and the knowledge. They will want an environment that they can live in comfortably in the future. So there's a great resource there just to tell kids the facts and to let them appreciate the compassion that's inherent
in
what
they... I agree. My bunny rabbit would eat everything on his hand.
And we could keep going, but Paul,
we
really, really appreciate you joining us. And Meat Free Week finishes this Sunday. Get on the website if you want to get some recipes. It's meatfreeweek.org.au. Can you plug your organisation? Do you have a website as well?
I have a website. My own website is Terra Stendo, if you're interested in that. Yep. Terrastendo.net, that's Terra as in Earth, Stendo, one word, terrastendo.net, that's on animal rights and the environment. And Melbourne Pigsave.org, we have a rally this Saturday in Bourke Street, Mel, peaceful awareness rally outside the GPO building.
And at what time?
Midday on Saturday until 2 o'clock. Fantastic. And, of course, meatfreeorg.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us. We are live here from 3CR, right in the heart of Friends of the Earth. Look at these beautiful people eating these wonderful vegan scrambles and frittatas. Yo. I'm sitting here with my empty hands.
Having beautiful coffee.
So hungry
coffee.
And jealous. But that coffee, oh my God, velvet.
It beats all the other coffees that we get every other Thursday by a street.
That coffee was divine. Whoever the barista is, you are a god. Thank you.
Come down to us. 312 Smith Street, Collingwood, if you want to come and join in the fun.
Give Dina a hug. He's battling with me 3 weeks.
I'm struggling. I'll get there. But as Paul said, it's all about educating. I'm still young. I'm young enough to be educated
to give up meat. It's not too late.
Give up prosciutto. Andrew Kelly's running a little bit late, but we'll have a bit of a chat. Julie Bishop, she's been on the news this week. First of all, she rolled her eyes, and as I said to you, when she went to Vanuatu, she looked like she was going to a polo match. You know, I know you didn't see the footage.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting to look at foreign aid, like $11 billion cut in foreign aid.
Already?
Talk about further cuts. When talking about Malcolm Fraser, what was Joe Hockeysinan doing? Praising the audit committee and the Fraser cuts because he's such a...
During that time, it says a lot.
And what's been really interesting is the way in which we have drastically altered the way we use foreign aid. Now we use foreign aid as a way to dump refugees in poor countries. Now we use foreign aid to shape policy in ways that meet our political agendas in the worst type of ways. And it's easy to discern to think $11 billion has gone for my foreign aid. And then we go into a place like Vanuatu pretending we care when we've actually gutted our aid to those regions.
I think that foreign aid has become a hotbed issue and will, because you look at that situation with Myron and Andrew Chan and then the Indonesian government saying, well, you know, if you threaten us, we'll just send these guys back.
Yeah.
But we've obviously just given them all this money, which we've taken from the foreign aid budget to go and rehouse the refugees.
And one of the critical things is when you take away that foreign aid and you trounce on human rights in your own region, it becomes so difficult to be a leader in that space. Mm. It becomes so difficult to shape policy that promotes and upholds human rights.
And try and dictate to other countries as well.
Yeah, and when you gut foreign aid, what do you actually do? You displace more people, resources are more scarce, tyrannical governments are more likely to rise, and you actually create more refugees. So it's this awful vicious cycle in terms of its misuse, its misapplication, and the way we're trying to create a master and slave relationship with it.
Yeah.
Like, Indonesia's right to be really pissed off at us.
Well, I think most countries are, even Nauru. You know, we keep saying, we'll look after you. But then all of a sudden we're saying if something drastic happens, we'll only give you $1 million and not $10 million.
Well, because Australia's engaging the trafficking of people. Fundamentally, this is what we are doing.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. As a country. Yeah.
As a country.
Yeah. Well, but you know what happens, because all you've got to do is put this guy in for six months. They make the rules, like Scott Morrison, and then you change your portfolio, put him somewhere else so they get off scot-free.
The heartening thing is Tony Abbott is clinging on for dear life, and as he clings on for dear life, he slowly sinks the Liberal Party into oblivion. So I just hope he just keeps battling.
And you were talking about the funeral tomorrow, Malcolm Fraser's funeral. I wonder what sorts of negative things are going to come out about the Liberal Party that he used to lead compared to the Liberal Party
I asked my mum when because there's a chance I might come across him tomorrow morning, if I could punch him in the face. And my mum said, please don't embarrass the family and you can't do that.
Like, you already have by stop eating meat, you know.
It's like when I accidentally came across John Howard. And we're both at this same exhibition. And I wanted to confront him. She's like, please do not do this.
You're going to embarrass my family.
I know, but imagine I could have king hit two prime ministers by now. Anyway, I'm diverting.
No.
Guys, we're at 3CR, right live from Friends of the Earth in the heart of Smith Street. Beautiful coffee is brewing. The wonderful people are flowing. And it's absolutely lovely to be here, putting the focus on meat-free week, putting a focus on animal welfare, putting a focus on the environment, putting a focus on knowing where our food comes from, low food miles, caring for our planet, caring for animals.
And if we could do it every week,
I would love to be here.
Is
there any chance we could just move here permanently for Thursday mornings?
I think it's time now to introduce our next guest. We've spoken to Cam on the phone lots of times, but we never have actually met.
Welcome. It is lovely to actually see you in person. This is very exciting.
And Cam Walker is from Friends of the Earth. And
campaigns coordinator here.
Yeah, and he's a campaigns coordinator. And I've spoken about fracking a lot, and now we're about to talk about it again. But what I would really like to get from you, Cam, is maybe to explain to our listeners exactly what fracking is, because I think there might be a bit of confusion about whether it's to do with the manufacturing of oil or whether it's to do with drilling. I'm not quite sure, so it would be great to get
and
a bit of
and can I ask you, and Cam, as a second question, I was watching Q&A the other night, and the big focus was on coal seam gas, was on fracking. And you had farmers sitting there going, it's poisoning our waters and so on. But then you had politicians arguing, but there are places you can safely frack. So after explaining it, can you answer that question? Can it be safely done? Are there safe places you can do it?
Sure.
But yeah, first, what is fracking?
So obviously our economy at this point relies a lot on gas. And traditionally for gas, they use what's called natural gas, where it's trapped somewhere in a pocket and you drill into the seam and you can basically suck it to the surface, process it and use it. But because we're running out of the end of that gas, they're moving into what they call unconventional gases. And the three main types are coal seam gas, which is what's really been upsetting people, tight gas, so gas that's trapped tightly in rock, or shale gas, shale that's, shale seams that hold gas. Now, because the gas in those reservoirs is held very tightly, the molecules of gas, you have to fracture the rock in order to release the gas. Hence the name hydraulic fracturing, shortened to fracking. Okay. Now, there's a whole bunch of problems with that. You're creating many earthquakes, and there's quite a bit of growing evidence, particularly from England, that intensive fracking can actually impact on fault lines and actually cause increased seismic activity, i.e. earth tremors. But the thing that actually really worries me is the impact on groundwater, because in the fracking process, generally you will also inject various chemicals with the fracking mixture in order to release the gas, and that's pulled to the surface and it's dangerous. You've got to treat that, but you run the risk of what they call cross-contamination. So those chemicals in the frack material, or the chemicals that are naturally in the seam, trapped safely underground, getting mixed with the aquifer. And that's back to Q&A, where the farmers are getting upset, because farmers in Australia generally rely on groundwater. And it's my belief, based on evidence in Queensland, it's not safe and you don't want to do it anywhere. Here in Victoria, we've kind of moved on from the coal seam gas debate, and it's focusing on shale and tight gas.
Yeah.
And industry says, look, it's a lot deeper. We won't go near the aquifers. We don't use as many chemicals. It'll be right. And, you know, I would just ask the audience, how many times have you heard corporations say that before they do something appalling?
And how many earthquakes have we had in Melbourne over the last 3 years?
Can I ask you, I was looking at US data on this, where they think we're finding that there was a 5% failure rate, as in a 5%, and out of thousands, they were talking about thousands of spotting going, the data shows that 5% fail, and I'm talking about that's in the hundreds. Hundreds that are failing, as in it's cracking.
Yes.
As in this cross, where you see that visual of people being able to light up their water.
Yep.
When it does fail, beyond, you talked about, you know, everything from the minor earthquakes, more critically about the way it degrades soil and water, when it does fail and gets into your water stream, then they're arguing, oh, well, we can treat it and we can sort it out. But how, once it's that deep in, I picture it almost like the root of a tree. And if I've poisoned the root of a tree, how the hell do I ever get that out? Can you get it out?
No, you can't. That's the obvious thing. An aquifer, by definition, is a body of water. It's underground. You can't put a fence around it. And, of course, the failures generally won't happen in 1 or 2 years. They might happen, as you say, in 5 years or in 20 years. Those companies might be long gone by then. So who will be accountable? So, A, we can't remediate contamination, and so it's going to impact over the area, the distance that aquifer covers. And some of them are co-linked. We know about the Great Artesian Basin, which covers, you know, much of the southern half of the landmass. But those companies might be long gone. And I always look to the example here in Victoria. We had this mine up in the mountains in the Tambo River in Gippsland. The company went broke. And who picked up the tab for that? It was $6 million to rehabilitate the tailings dam. Of course, we did, the taxpayers. Mm. So companies will keep saying regulation is good nowadays, so trust us, trust the government, and the technology is great, so trust us. And, you know, I just think it's a very high risk to take the word of companies who basically want to get their foot in the door in order to make big bucks.
And talking about trusting the government, is the moratorium still on fracking still out until June, or has it been pushed back?
It could go later. It's now tied to a state government inquiry. So this is a really great campaign because if you think about it, environmental activism is often driven by people in the city, you know, people in places like Collingwood, you know, the leafy green suburbs as well. It's often seen as a progressive issue. This is, I would argue, one of the key environmental issues in the state, and it's been driven by farmers, you know, it's been driven by National Party voters, it's been driven by regional people, and an amazing alliance forced the coalition government, when they were in power, to put in place a moratorium on drilling, exploratory drilling and fracking, and that was directly as a result of communities getting organised, particularly the community of Seaspray in Gippsland, who are really awesome, you know, National Party heartland, but very awesome community, and they got mobilised and they said they don't want it. They were going to bring a protest to Melbourne featuring farmers. The government blinked and they put a ban on the drilling for the time being. The new government has reaffirmed they'll keep the moratorium in place. They're going to initiate a state inquiry. We're hoping the terms of reference for that will be very broad, so it looks at social impacts, social licence, environmental impacts right across the board, so it's a very broad kind of hearing of the data, bringing it all out in the, into the open. And we would hope at the end of that process the government says there isn't room for this industry in this state. We don't think it can coexist with farming. But it does mean the moratorium is in place until that state inquiry reports back, which is likely to be next year now.
Which then gets back to what you were saying about big business who, you know, anything could happen within that time where we might have to end up then picking up their bill if something does go wrong. So, you know, the longer they keep sort of pushing it back, it just sort of means, you know, gas will not... really, the drilling, the fracking, the community angst won't stop while this keeps happening. And obviously the big business will keep doing their bit.
And, you know, you're absolutely right. The community angst continues to grow. And this is also amazing because the community sustained this campaign over more than 3 years. This weekend there's going to be a community in Gippsland declare itself gas field free. And they do that by door knocking their whole community, asking the question, would you support us declaring ourselves gas field free? It has no legal power, but it has incredible moral power. Yeah. 44 communities have done that, and these are generally communities that are not generally politically active. There'll be another one this weekend and then a couple in a couple of weeks' time. So we'll hit 50 communities declaring themselves coal or gas field free by mid-year, and that in itself is an incredible new kind of aspect to the environment movement.
It's an amazing achievement. It's great momentum. Obviously, let's get to the heart of the issue. The big issue is here, where do we get our energy from?
Indeed.
And that's a deeper issue, isn't it, around we still rely on dirty coal. We're looking at fracking as the new messiah. We don't have leadership at a federal level, and it's pretty poor at a state level on this issue. So let's talk tangible, practical policy alternative, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to win that debate. Is it's going to be the hip pocket, it's going to be our health, it's going to be our land. But at the end of the day, that hip pocket argument, as well as this idea that we're being sold that this is the way we must go, we need coal, we need mining, we need so on. How do we flip that narrative in a mainstream, and what does that policy alternative look like?
A lot of it will be hip pocket.
Yeah.
And that's because the federal government has hooked us into a global trade in unconventional gas.
Yeah.
That means in coming years, as it's exported out of WA and out of Queensland, we'll be competing globally for the gas that we're paying for in our house if we're cooking with gas or heating with gas. So unconventional gas will not save us from price rises. So that, I think, is how we will win, essentially. At this point, we do rely on gas very strongly in manufacturing, and that's a complex issue. How do we make sure that, you know, the food manufacturers, there's a lot of gas, for instance, used in the pulp mill in Gippsland. You know, there's a lot of gas used in manufacturing. How do we transition to renewables? And some feedstocks will require continued use of gas, and potentially down the track we can use biogas, so gas that's not coming from fossil fuels. The key thing in the short term is to get renewables going and to shut down existing coal capacity. So as you said, there's no leadership in terms of cutting down coal, but energy demand has already plateaued in Australia, so we need to fill the gap that's created through coal being not able to compete anymore on the market with renewables, which brings us to the renewable energy target, which, as we know, the federal government is trying to kill. It's possible there will be a deal on this today. At this point, the target, which was set up, commits Australia to getting 20% of its energy needs from renewable energy sources by the end of this decade. Mr Abbott, when he got to power, being anti-renewables and basically a climate sceptic, wants to kill off the target. They've been doing a very good job of trying to force the ALP to accept a very low deal. So at present, it's 20%, and that translates as 41,000 gigawatt hours. The government wants to bring it down to 32,000, so a really significant cut. The ALP is kind of prevaricating in the middle there. The Greens have said they will oppose it, but yesterday the Clean Energy Council came out and said we'd accept a target of 33,500. So from 41,000 down to 33,500 is a huge drop, and we're worried that today a deal will be done.
So, Cam, just on that question, we looked last time at an emissions trading scheme, and I've got to wrap up, so 30-second answer. The challenge here is, do we start somewhere? The difficulty is, obviously, they're getting wedged. Like, they're so extremist ideologically, this government. Do we start? Is it better to start somewhere and get some agreement and build from there, or get into a gridlock where there's nothing? That's the last, just in 30 seconds.
Our argument is we already have agreement over a 41,000 gigawatt hour target. Let's not kill it. The crossbenchers, who aren't necessarily the people you'd think to be allies, most of them are on board with this anyway.
Yeah. They're the only sensible people left in Parliament.
Some of them are, yes. So we need to hold the ALP to the line, and if we can keep ALP with the Greens and enough of the crossbenchers, it won't get through. So these are interesting days. There are new alliances being formed around a whole range of environmental and social issues. And the main game around energy is hold what we've got, and then once we hold that, build something new.
Okay. Absolute Cam. Pleasure, Cam.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Cheers.
Again.
Thank
you. Thursday breakfast.
Thank you. And Cam has been a champion of the environmental movement for decades. So it's a real pleasure to have you here, mate. Thank you so much.
At least now I've got a broad understanding of what fracking is. It makes
perfect
sense.
He said it so beautifully. We need to get him on television.
It makes perfect sense, because I tried reading about it and it was talking about hydraulic fracturing, and I'm like...
Yeah, I know. They lose me. It's like I'm like Homer Simpson when I start explaining
it. Yeah, I mean, it's good to see that the you know, they had a target that they reached at 41,000. It's actually gone down to 31,500, which
is fantastic.
Yeah, it
keeps trying to push. Yeah. No, well, we need to get hopefully to hold at 41,000. We are off to an announcement. We are here at Friends of the Earth in Smith Street.
Dum da 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 dum da 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 boom 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 boom. Hi, I'm Rod Quantock, and you're listening to Fill in the Dots. You know who you're listening to. Why do I have to tell you who you're listening to? You know who you're listening to. You're listening to, yes, Fill in the 3CR Community Radio. You got it right. You've won a giraffe. We're at 8:55 a.m. We're on digital radio and streaming at 3cr.org.au. 3CR has been making trouble since 1976, and occasionally I've been part of the trouble that's been made. It's a vital part of our media landscape, and I'd encourage you to get a hacksaw, an oxyacetylene torch, and go up to the Dandenongs and bring down all those broadcast towers that aren't 3CR's towers, and let's make 3CR the only source of information to an information-starved, dumbed-down Australian community. Written, authorised and spoken by Neil Mitchell.
3CR Breakfast.
We're back. It's 7:52 and 30 seconds on 8:55 a.m. 3CR.
Oh, I'm bringing up a beautiful coffee. You need to start home delivering on your bicycles.
Yeah, for sure. Look, as I said, it's going to be a tight show. We've got our next guest on, Andrew Kelly from the Yarra Riverkeepers. We've had the Yarra River Keepers on 3CR Thursday Breakfast a few times. The aim of the Yarra River Keepers Association is to protect and restore the Yarra and its tributaries for current and future generations. I actually read somewhere that the Yarra River used to be straight, which we can ask Andrew about. Good morning, Andrew, and thanks for joining us on Sustainable Breakfast.
Morning, Dean. Morning, Con.
Morning.
Now, I've just mentioned what your aim is, and I know that we had spoken to Ian Penrose a few times, who is your predecessor. Can you give our listeners just a little bit of information about what the Yarra River Keeper Association is, and also some of the things? I've just been speaking to Eleanor, who's mentioned that you guys are actually pushing to have a Yarra Protection Act. So just give us a brief rundown as to your role and what Yarra River Keepers do.
We advocate for the Yarra. We're part of a network of 150 waterkeepers worldwide. Each waterway has a keeper, and I'm lucky enough to be the Yarra River Keeper.
That's cool. I am the keeper. I love it. Go on.
And we speak and educate. We speak for the river, we advocate for the river, and we educate people about the river. So we try and keep it in the forefront of people's minds.
And how many rivers would you say in Victoria have somebody like you doing what you do?
There's three of us here in Victoria. There's Neil Blake, who's the Port Phillip Bay Keeper.
Okay.
And there's John Forrester, who's the Werribee River Keeper.
Okay.
So this raises the question of, why do these rivers need a keeper? Like, rivers are beautiful. You'd think people would respect them, preserve them, and understand them. But clearly, if there's a keeper, there's an issue. So why is there a need for this work? Why are rivers under threat? What are the challenges in preserving them and looking after them?
Rivers worldwide are under huge pressure. I mean, obviously, we need water. We need rivers. They're very convenient, though, as drains.
Yeah.
They're very convenient ways of getting rid of waste. And certainly Melbourne got rid of an awful lot of waste a long time ago along the river and still does. But there were industries along the river, tanneries, breweries, all of which put their waste straight into the river. And that happens worldwide. Of course, you know, in the developing world, there's those sorts of patterns are being repeated now. We've offshored our pollution, but we still have very serious problems on a river like the Yarra, which is basically a population problem. As Melbourne's population grows, we're filling in the gaps, we're filling in the spaces, we're filling up the open spaces, and many of those open spaces are along waterways.
And currently, does the Yarra River have any standardised planning controls to stop that? I mean, you look at the development of, what's that oval there near the MCG, you know, along Olympic Park, where they used to have the athletics. You look at the development of the Princes Bridge. Do you have like a sort of an idea as to how you can stop any development that's happening along the Yarra to make sure that it remains pristine and, I guess, as pristine as it is at the moment?
Well, that's exactly what we're pushing for, Dean. That's a really good question, because what we want is one authority to look after the river. At the moment, it's a patchwork of authorities. Mm-hmm. Often people have different sorts of responsibilities. Their responsibilities may overlap a little bit. Often the river is actually a frontier between different responsibilities. So Boroondara will end and Yarra will start, Banyule will start, Nillumbik will start. So nobody's really responsible for the river and nobody carries through often what are great plans that are drawn up. So if we had a one Yarra authority, they could carry all those plans and ideas forward and protect the river and look at the river as a connected whole. One issue, I think, is with this patchwork is that you're not looking at the river from mountains to source, or from mountains to estuary, from the mountains to the bay.
How do we manage? You know, there is such a bipartisan support for inner-city development. Like, it's supported by the Greens, Labor, Liberal. And I worry sometimes it's supported blindly, as in the idea that, well, if we're building in a city, high rise, and we're building dense, it's always good because they're close to the city. But I always wonder about the environmental impact and footprint when you create that congestion. You see it in the big cities of Europe. My worry is we're heading more and more that way. Like, the city's gone from a place where almost no one lived a decade ago to it's just growing, and high rise development is everywhere. So the Yarra's only going to get a pounding more and more. It's only going to have more pressure on it. So how do we navigate through that space where property developers and the interest bipartisan for support, whether it's environmental reasons or corporate reasons, we're going to just see an escalation of this. How do we manage through that development and escalation and intensification of residential dwellings in the, around our river? Because it's only going to keep skyrocketing. It's not going anywhere, really.
That's right, Con. I think Melbourne's population is going to be 9 million by 2030 or 2050. Yeah. You hear different figures thrown around, but it's certainly growing.
Yeah.
And that's growing by filling in the spaces
and
going upwards. You look at the Alphington Mill site, which is 16.5 hectares. Now a third of it is open grassland and trees.
Yeah.
By the time in 5 or 10 years when the development's finished, that will all be apartments. Yeah. So that's a loss of habitat for the river. So it is under immense pressure, and I think there's recognition by a whole lot of levels of government that we need housing for people. We need affordable housing for people.
But most of this development is not affordable. I mean, that's the bullshit in all of this is we're building all of this when a one bedroom apartment starts at $395,000. That's not affordable to anyone but a yuppie or a hipster. So the challenge is social housing. It's one thing if you were creating mandatory, you know, like every developer must have 20% social housing. That's not happening. It's rare. There are a few little pilots, but it's generally not happening.
I take your point. I certainly know at the Alphington site, there is, I think, 5% affordable housing has been specified by the council. Whether that's enough is a very interesting question.
It's clearly not.
and I know, sorry, because I know we're getting to 8 o'clock, there was an introduction of a Yarra River Protection Act.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
How's that going?
Well, it's going really well. So we put it up at the last election, and the Andrews Labor government has committed to it.
Great.
And we had a meeting with the planning minister yesterday, which was very exciting.
What's
so they're
his
behind
name?
It.
It's not Matthew Guy, is it?
No, it's
Matthew, I Richard. Love high-rise development guy.
Yeah, well,
you got Richard Wynn, who's a much Richard better Wynn. Person to deal with.
And so it was a fantastic meeting. They're very committed to it.
That's
they've
great to
committed
hear.
In the press to it. They're saying they'll do it this year. They're saying they're going to consult with the community, which will be fantastic, so we all have a say in the way the act comes out. So it's exciting.
That's progress. That's great to hear.
Yeah. And
just to wrap it up, is it true that the Yarra River used to be straight?
Oh, I don't think so.
You're the keeper. You've
it's
got to
very
find
very curvy. It's full of meanders. It winds around and around.
And your website is Yarra River Keepers?
No, it's yarrariver.org.au. And to join the campaign that we're...
Fantastic.
And what
is the campaign? That is still the Protection Act, isn't it?
Yes, we're running it with Environmental Justice Australia.
Yep.
We're co-partnering to keep this issue to the forefront and to deliver the best act and the best Yarra Trust that can be delivered.
Andrew, thank you very much for joining us on 3CR Thursday Breakfast, as always.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you.
Thanks, Con.
And whenever you are having a picnic along the Yarra River, don't dump your rubbish in there. Clean up after yourself.
Otherwise, the keeper's force will be after
you.
The
keeper will come for you, and you'll be walking around with a baseball bat. So stay away from the Yarra. We're at 3CR. You're live from Friends of the Earth. It is now nigh on 8 o'clock. The sun is rising. The sky is blue. The coffee is brewing and great. And time for the 8 o'clock news.
No news.
Whoa.
Just a community announcement and music.
Of Indigenous Australians.
That means to save our culture and save our dreams, our footprints, dreams, our songline, and keep our culture going strong.
Of course, a lot of the Aboriginals, having been stolen, were put into state care, and also others.
The recognition of what our people have been through in the last 200 years, the recognition of our culture in the last 40,000 years, and the recognition of where we are heading into the future.
Welcome to Survival Day, Invasion Day. 223 years ago, the white man landed on our shore.
Subscribe to 3CR and help keep Indigenous voices on air. Call us on 94198377 or visit 3cr.org.au. Subscribe now.
3CR Breakfast would like to say thanks to program sponsor, the New International Bookshop, for the financial support of this program. You can find NIBS in the basement of Trades Hall at 54 Victoria Street, Carlton.
3CR programs provide information and analysis you won't hear in the mainstream.
Today we'll be looking at the legacy of the US war on Vietnam on Laos.
And as far as corporate capitalism is concerned, it is the worst political and economic system that you can have.
Our laws about jailing refugees and asylum seekers are so well crafted.
Sex is not irrelevant, and we like who we are, but we don't have to be imprisoned by our gender.
Become a subscriber today. Call us on 9419 8377 or visit 3cr.org.au. 3CR, the voice of dissent.
Breakfast Radio meets the people.
So come along to 3CR Sustainable Breakfast Series, broadcast live from Friends of the Earth Food Co-op.
Join us for breakfast tasties at Friends of the Earth Cafe, 312 Smith Street, Collingwood, or tune in to 3CR to hear what people are doing in the area of sustainability.
From Monday, March 23rd to Friday, March 27th, starts at 7 a.m. and goes through till 8:30 a.m.
So if you're down on Smith Street any of the mornings, come down, watch a live show. Every show will have a musician, and it's a fantastic initiative by 3CR and Friends of the Earth.
Supported by Yarra Council.
VCR are selling kaffir Palestinian scarves in support of the last factory that produces them in Hebron, Palestine. All profits will be donated to the reconstruction efforts in Gaza and support Palestinian industry. Just $25 each. These are traditional scarves available in red and black, or you can choose from a modern design. Go to 3cr.org.au/shop to buy online or drop into the station during business hours.
want to get in contact with a socially progressive audience and diverse communities? Are you organising a forum, concert, festival, rally, call-out or film screening and want to let people know? Unlike other community radio stations, 3CR doesn't have commercial advertising, but we do offer not-for-profit, community and government organisations a chance to connect with 3CR's diverse and lively audience. Go to www.3cr.org.au and find out about our very affordable community announcements. Or call 3CR on 9419 8377 and get your event on air.
We've just passed 8 a.m. and we have three wonderful guests led by Scarlett. So adorable. We have Genevieve, one of the members of the Friends of the Earth Food Co-op. We've got Heidi, who's going to talk to us about community composting. And we're talking to Scarlett. Scarlett, how old are you?
I'm 8 and a half.
That's awesome. So we've got Scarlett, who's going to be talking about her school garden. Scarlett, we're going to kick off with you, Scarlett. Do you want to tell us about this school garden? So you're running a school garden. How did this happen? What are you growing?
We're growing lots of vegetables.
Awesome.
And lots of fruit.
And are you enjoying it?
Yeah.
How did you get involved?
Well, when I first came to that school, I saw the garden and I really loved it. And then I got introduced to Heidi.
And do you get to take that vegetables and fruit home?
Sometimes.
Oh, sometimes. I'd say I'd ask for it all the time.
And then Heidi, are you helping with the composting to help in supporting that garden? Is that how you...
Yes, I'm the garden teacher there and I run the program with a kitchen teacher as well. So a lot of the produce is cooked at the school as well as sold at a market after school time. So that's why Scarlett gets to take stuff home as well as cook with things and eat them in the school.
Sorry,
program.
Did you say you were a garden teacher?
Yes.
Okay, so the school has a program where they actually employ somebody to talk about sustainability and gardening?
Yeah, most of all, we give them an experience, an enjoyable experience working with nature and fresh produce and organic produce, so the children can hopefully carry that throughout their lives.
And I guess this gets back to what Paul Marnie was talking about, you know, starting with the children in terms of teaching them about eating food and not necessarily consuming a lot of meat during Meat Free Week. And Genevieve, your role is to talk about, you know, sustainable food sovereignty and things like that within Friends of the Earth. Is that your campaign?
Well, I'm a worker in the food co-op and, yes, it is its own food campaign, and that kind of encompasses a lot of things. So it's not just about sustainable eating, it's also about education, and so working with people to sort of educate them about what they're eating, where it comes from, even how to cook. So a lot of our volunteers gain a lot of cooking skills through working with us. So yeah, it's quite a broad range, pretty much anything to do with food.
Just quickly, before Cotton asks you a really serious question, now you three are doing something that I would like to do. I've got a pretty big backyard. My house faces north and I get a lot of sun. How do I start to produce really, really good food for myself, apart from reading magazines and going, okay, well, this is in season. I've got fertile land, I know, because I've got oranges growing. What can I do to start sort of, you know, growing easy stuff and eating really healthy stuff?
Shall I start, Scarlett? Well, compost is a really great place to start. Here we have a beautiful exchange with Fitzroy Primary, where the Kitchen Garden Program is, and Faux. We collect the compost from Friends of the Earth Cafe, as well as compost the waste on site. And I just wanted to give you some figures. Over the years, every week we collect buckets, don't we, Scarlett?
Yep.
Of compost from here, and which is ends up being about 8,000 kilos a year, and we turn that into waste. So over the last 10 years where the program's been running, we've done 8 times 10 is 80,000 kilos of compost. So compost and the soil is the best place to start, and Faux also sells seeds. And you can also buy your seeds and just throw them in the ground. Give them lots of loving care.
It sounds wonderful. Scarlett, being able to grow your own veggies and then being able to cook your own veggies, what has that taught you? What have you learned from that experience for yourself in terms of seeing where the food comes from, growing the food, cooking the food? What's that been like for you to learn all about this?
It's been great, and I've had lots of experience with food, and because after school on Wednesdays I have a cooking club, so we also make things there as well.
And what's your specialty? What could you whip up and wow me with? What's your great dish?
Zucchini slice.
Ooh, nice.
And have you eaten, have you grown or eaten anything that some of your friends have never eaten before?
I think so.
Like guava? Have you ever grown guava? No. Oh, I think you should try
but
growing guava.
I have had feijoas.
Yeah.
I
those damn New Zealanders, they know how to grow good fruit.
I think the bigger question for Scarlett is, where is our zucchini slice, Scarlett? Have you brought us zucchini slice?
Nope.
You've come empty-handed.
Now, Genevieve, just quickly, the co-op, how long has that been running? And I know he talks about issues in supporting local organic agriculture. And the reason I'm asking is, you know, you get to a point when you're in a relationship and you're single, you don't really care. But once you start to have children, you start to think, what's in my food? You know, and I guess what I'm trying to work out is just getting to a point where we can find healthy alternatives and making sure that our kids have healthy food.
Yeah, sure. So the co-op has been running in this area for like 20 to 25 years, I think. Not always in this building. We were in Brunswick Street as well. And, you know, it does provide the community with access to really healthy whole foods that are sustainably sourced. So in terms of, you know, looking after your body and looking after your family, the best thing you can do is to shop somewhere like Friends of the Earth, where you know that everything that you buy is going to be good for you, is going to be produced ethically. And ultimately, we don't sell a lot of packaged foods. It's all unpackaged and whole foods, so you can bring your containers and do your shopping. So in that way, we're minimising waste as well. It also means that if you do most of your shopping here, you're going to have to create a lot of your food from scratch, which is a fantastic thing to do, not just in terms of eliminating packaging, but also in terms of what you are actually eating and putting into your body. It's going to give you a much, much higher level of nutrition than buying pre-made foods.
And this, I think you need that network too, as somebody who's just starting out, having somewhere where you can go and go, okay, well, I'd like to do this. These people have had experience for the last 10, 15 years, and then you work together to get to somewhere where you can achieve something by yourself and then you contribute back as well.
Yeah, definitely. And the nice thing about the co-op is you can volunteer and you can work in the kitchen and directly learn skills, or you can come and do your shopping and talk to some of the staff. They're all very knowledgeable and they'll help you to understand if there's something you're not sure how to cook. And often other customers are actually sharing recipes and helping each other out. And then the shopping experience becomes something else entirely. And it's really about community and helping each other to learn.
Genevieve, as a garden teacher, I'm fascinated because I couldn't even get a history teacher at my school. It was so terrible. So it's wonderful your school has a garden teacher. At the heart of that, in terms of what you're trying to teach kids, what are the core things you're wanting children to take away when you're teaching them? Beyond knowing where the food comes from or how to grow it, why is that early education important? What are you hoping to impart on the kids?
Well, to embrace healthy food is a really great, would be a really great outcome of the program. And we do see that children who are not keen to take up a piece of fresh food do, and they eat it. They often end up eating everything off the plate, don't they? And of course, an understanding of our connection with nature, I think, through exploring not only plants but the creatures in the garden. We keep chickens as well, so for developing some sort of sense of stewardship for the earth, in understanding the cycles of energy.
Can I ask you then, Heidi, do you also talk about First People, about Indigenous connection to land and about the history of that? Is that part of the narrative with kids, about getting them to understand the custodians of the land and the traditions of the land along with the land we inherit now? Is that...
Well, I do try and weave that into the teachings, and we do invite guests to speak in certain festivals and things like that that orientate around the garden. Yes, and definitely in Reconciliation Week, we'll plant a lily pilly or eat lily pillies and talk about the Dreamtime story and weave that into our learning, or and also plant Indigenous gardens and things like that.
Well, guys, we have a musician waiting. Geez, time goes so quick. Just what's the name of the school? Fitzroy Primary?
Yes.
If anybody's got kids out there, I'm sure there's going to be a massive waiting list for Fitzroy Primary. Send them to that school so they can learn how to cook and we can have, you know, sustainable living.
It's such a pleasure to meet you, Scarlett and Heidi and Genevieve. And remember, Scarlett, next time, zucchini slice. Do not turn up empty-handed to 3CR. Pleasure to have you all.
Can we quickly plug the Fitzroy Market, where we do a lot of fundraising, and also the need for volunteers, if anybody out there would like to volunteer on the program.
And do you have a website for the market?
Well, it's the first Saturday of every month, and the website, Emily?
What can they
Google? Fitzroy Market. Fitzroy Market.
Just type in Fitzroy Market on Google and it will come up.
Such a pleasure to meet you all. Thank you. Thanks, Carlos. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye. It's going to be time for some work.
Hey, Jodie, I'm so excited. I just can't hide it. Oh, just in the words of the Pointer Sisters, hey? Why? What's happening?
The new 3CR t-shirts are coming out. We had a competition. Kate Reid won it, and it's so beautiful. It's got roses and a love heart, and then the caption is, "Resistance is fertile."
Oh, too deadly that, eh?
So in order to get one, go to the 3CR website and follow the link to shop. And they're $30.
$30? Oh, what a bargain.
And $25 for kids. You'll be able to secure one for yourself because they're in hot demand.
Yay, get one now. I'm so excited for we. I just can't hide it. I'm about to lose control and I think I like it. Oh, yeah. I'm so
excited and I just can't hide it. You're listening to Radio 3CR and I am Associate Professor in History Claire Wright.
Ceres in East Brunswick has a new state-of-the-art community kitchen. The kitchen is available to hire 7 days a week by individuals or groups who want to run a workshop or a course, hold an event, or just get together to cook with friends. Ceres is also running team building days and hens parties with a difference. Get in touch with us at ceres.org.au or call 9389 0100 to find out more. Ceres Community Kitchen, celebrating collaboration and food. Group space for hire to train, connect and inspire. Ceres, a 3CR supporter.
Friends of the Earth, you know who we are.
Almost 40 years of campaigning for environmental and social justice.
But the issues just keep getting bigger instead of going away.
Coal seam gas mining and the destruction of vital farmland.
Unsustainable logging practices.
Backward-looking wind energy policy. Chemicals in our drinking water.
CO2 in the atmosphere reaching record levels unthinkable 10 years ago.
Now, more than ever, Friends of the Earth needs your financial help.
The big ask is for your contribution, so that we can keep on asking the big questions.
Go to www.melbourne.foe.org.au.
Make a contribution. Become a member.
Friends of the Earth, an active voice for social justice and a cleaner, greener, more sustainable planet.
Okay, we're back. We've been coming to you live from Friends of the Earth Food Co-op on Smith Street, Fitzroy, as part of our Sustainable Breakfast Series. It's time now to introduce the lady with two hats. We've just had Genevieve talking to us, and now she's about to play the harp for us. Thanks, Genevieve. Thank you.
And that was Genevieve.
It's glorious. It's kind of like if Jeff Buckley played the harp. That's what it would sound like. That is beautiful. Thank you. It's absolutely
gorgeous.
One more track. Ah, that is glorious. Can you wake me up every morning with that? Can you just, like, come to my bedroom and just play that and I can wake to that every day?
That was fantastic. And
it's Genevieve from the wonderful Friends of the Earth Food Co-op here in the heart of Smith Street. We told you you should have come down. You could have had a veggie scramble and heart playing.
And some frittata. We've still got some food left. We've got 1 minute and 30 seconds where you can still come and join us. But we'd like to thank our guests. Paul Marnie talking to us about Meat Free Week, and also Andrew Kelly.
The Yarra River's Keeper, which I absolutely love. We want to also thank, so we've got Meat Free Week, so thank you to Paul Mahoney, thank you to Andrew Kelly, thank you to the wonderful Scarlett to tell us about her community garden, and Heidi, our garden teacher. Genevieve also telling us about the wonderful work they do here in the food
Cam
co-op.
Walker was in here as well.
I can forget Cam talking about the dangers of fracking. And Friends of the Earth, how exciting. Friends of the Earth is having its 40th birthday. Woohoo! Come and join us at Circus Oz Spiegel Tent, just near the tote. It's a beautiful tent. I've been in many times. Friday, the 8th of May at 8 p.m. You got sugar-fed leopards, glitter rats, black orchid string band, Lynn Kent performs a gift, Sammy Hoopstar. Just go to the Friends of the Earth Facebook page or go to the Friends of the Earth website. 40th birthday. Congratulations, yeah, guys. That is amazing.
Crazy. Or you can contact Beth on 9417-4382. But thank you once again to Friends of the Earth. We've been coming live from Friends of the Earth Food Co-op in Smith Street, Fitzroy, as part of our Sustainable Breakfast Series. Join in for Thursday Breakfast again next week.
And join us again for tomorrow as for the final breakfast at FOE for the year. I can't wait
Time
to come back
for
next
Lost
year.
In Science after this.
Thank you. Woo.
You've been listening to 3CR Breakfast, community news and independent current affairs.
I'm Claire Burns.
Adrian Wong.
Diana Beaumont.
Caden Nick.
Rihanna Whitson.
Ron and Dee.
Katie Weiss.
The uranium mining area.
Shake-up of the Australian Defence Force.
It's women who seem to miss out yet again.
Coal-fired power station.
Carbon price mechanism.
Ongoing protests in Egypt.
Some current affairs goodness for you this morning.
3CR's Tuesday Breakfast Show.
Wednesday Breakfast.
Thursday Breakfast.
Friday Breakfast.
We've got a massive show today.
Monday to Friday, 7am until 8:30am. On 3CR Digital, 855 on the AM dial and streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
One of these days and it won't be long.